You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
For a lot of us, Thanksgiving is a day of eating good food and often a lot of it. And the day after Thanksgiving is a great time to enjoy what's left of that epic meal. And our guest says that whatever leftovers are in favor or out of fashion depends a lot on economic conditions and even moral imperatives.
Helen Veit is an associate professor of history at Michigan State University. She's the author of Modern Food, Moral Food, Self-Control, Science, and the Rise of Modern American Eating in the Early 20th Century. Helen, welcome to Central Time. Helen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, but before refrigerators, leftovers weren't a thing, or they were something very different than we think of them now. What was the pre-refrigerator leftover like?
In pre-refrigerator America, which really is the 19th century, leftovers were, it's not that they didn't exist, it's that they were so common that people didn't feel a need to use a special name for them. Using up food left from one meal was absolutely essential to economic solvency, to survival in some cases. So leftovers were something that people dealt with all the time, usually by reincorporating them into the next meal, often eating them for breakfast, things like leftover pie or leftover meat or leftover beans, whatever you had, and sometimes by incorporating them into stews or things like that.
And you had to do it quickly.
Absolutely. Cooking really was a race against decay in the 19th century, so knowing how to use up leftovers and consuming them quickly was really key.
So with the refrigerator coming along, I understand from your piece that one of the first leftover cookbooks was actually commissioned by a refrigerator company. So they knew they had something new here.
Absolutely. What was so distinct about having refrigeration in the home? And when people talked about refrigerators in the early days, they often meant ice boxes, so not, you know, electric refrigerators. But what was new was that you could serve exactly the same food, or a dinner, for example, that was recognizably the same dinner, maybe 3 days later. That had never happened before. So people started to think of this as a new culinary category.
But our attitude toward serving that meal again and again has really changed, really oscillated back and forth over time. And I want to start with that idea in the Great Depression, where leftovers were a virtue, maybe even a necessity.
For some Americans, they were absolutely a necessity. But the 1930s also marked the start of what I think of as this sort of golden age of leftovers, where people really celebrated the cook's ingenuity in repackaging leftovers, maybe fooling reluctant family members into eating them, applying art to making them newly exciting, you know, maybe putting them in a Jell-O mold, for example, or using a sort of special gourmet casserole to you know, put them into, use that as a vehicle. And so the 1930s, really through the 1950s, were in some ways the high point of leftovers, in part because of economics. People wanted to use this food up as, you know, part of their family budgeting, but also as this sort of new venue for creativity and sort of culinary creativity.
Now, that Depression era came out of the 20s, a time of prosperity, but then before that, World War One. We'd already seen some back and forth on leftovers. World War One, I guess people were wanting to save food to help starving kids in Belgium.
Absolutely. There was actually a huge home front conservation campaign in America during World War One, mainly to send food to places like Belgium that had been invaded and that needed food, also eventually to send food to U.S. soldiers. So on the home front, the U.S. government launched an enormous propaganda campaign to convince Americans not to waste food and especially to eat their leftovers. So they really focused on getting Americans to use up every crumb, to cook things like casseroles and stews, things that weren't actually that fashionable at the time. Even pasta dishes. Pasta got a real boost in the war because of this emphasis on leftovers. Some people even did things like suggesting that cafeterias or restaurants scrape dirty plates and try to resell that food. Some people in this era even said that cooks at home should strain their dishwater and all of the food, the little food fragments that were left, they should put those into a soup. So they really took it to an extreme in some cases.
And did we see in that World War I time and then up in the Great Depression, cookbooks, newspaper articles, things like that, helping us use those leftovers, maybe not to the extreme of those that dishwater, but casseroles and things like that?
Absolutely. What was so interesting was that by the 1910s and later, people were really talking about leftovers as their own distinct genre, their own category. And so, yes, cookbooks started to talk about them specifically. Newspaper articles definitely did, too.
Talking to Helen Veit from Michigan State University. She's a historian, and we're looking at the history of leftovers. Okay, you said 30s through World War II, Depression through World War II, leftovers of virtue, maybe into the 50s. What starts to change then?
Well, one thing that was changing was that Americans as a whole were spending less of their budgets on food. You can really see the U.S. Department of Agriculture has charted this, and you can just see the numbers plummet in terms of the percentage of their incomes that Americans were spending on food. Food was more abundant than it had ever been, and it was cheaper. And so that urgency, that sense that this was something that had to be done, we had to use up food, really faded for a lot of people. Even some relatively working class or poor Americans, leftovers became less urgent, and plate waste became much more common. And so leftovers went from something that was, sort of applying creativity to a task that had to be done, and increasingly by the 1960s, into something that seemed kind of like a drag. In many, many households, people continued to eat leftovers. Thrift was still a virtue, but leftovers themselves lost really any sense of glamour or excitement, and they became a very second-rate kind of meal. One you might sort of slog through on a weekday with a few eye rollings, but definitely not one that you would serve to company or one that you would necessarily brag about in a special cookbook.
And speaking of cookbooks, you trace this change through different editions of The Joy of Cooking cookbook. What happened with leftovers over time there?
That's right. That was one of my favorite parts of researching this article was getting to really comb through these different Joy of Cooking editions. In the beginning, the author, Irma Rombauer, was incredibly pro-leftover. She had a long section on leftovers. She carefully inventoried every recipe in the book that could serve as a vehicle for leftovers. She detailed her favorite techniques. That stayed in the Joy of Cooking editions for the next couple of decades. But by the early 1960s, the leftovers section became drastically condensed. It started with a joke about how leftovers were sort of dreary and no one wanted to eat them. The authors by that point, which included her daughter, started urging people not to disdain leftovers, saying, you don't have to think of them as this awful thing. They can be okay. That was a real shift in tone that really ushered in this new era of, to some degree, not even talking much about leftovers in cookbooks at all. By the end of the 20th century, The Joy of Cooking barely mentions leftovers, because it's just sort of assumed, you can maybe reheat it in the microwave, but it's not something we're going to go to the trouble of printing a special recipe about.
So we're less interested in eating our leftovers. Do we start to waste more food around this time?
Absolutely. American food waste has shot up over the course of the 20th century, in part because things that used to exist to take care of food waste, like compost and also pigs, have disappeared for a lot of people. Pigs, in particular, used to be a great way to transmogrify leftovers into bacon. You could take your spoiled milk or your scraps from the table, feed them to your pig, and then, eventually you could butcher the pig and you would have a lot of meat as a result. And I think that surprises a lot of Americans, but that wasn't just farm families. Even in towns and sometimes even in cities in the early 20th century, a lot of people kept pigs. Of course, that's pretty rare these days.
Yeah, urban chickens are in, but I don't think municipal codes are recognizing
they're
the
not quite
pig
as omnivorous.
So in such a friendly way. But there is, pigs aside, there has been a resurgence, you write, in leftovers. So what happened? Why did we start to love the leftover again?
Well, I think there's really a lot of new awareness about the ecological dimensions of food waste, that food, even if it doesn't seem like it costs that much when it comes to the budget, we're actually still spending a really low amount of our budget on food, it's very costly in other ways. People are newly aware about the tolls that transporting food or irrigating food crops or the petroleum used to harvest food or to cook it at home. All of these have gotten new attention as subjects of ecological concern, things we need to think about and reduce if possible. So the same people who are, you know, more conscious about their environmental impact are trying to reduce their food waste. At the same time, there's also been a real explosion, I think, in the foodie side of leftovers. The fact that if you make a stew or a curry or a lasagna and you let it sit for a few days, it can actually taste better. The flavors can meld. There's new appreciation, I think, of that this is not something with stigma, that in fact this can be a way to elevate taste.
I don't know if I'm an outlier. I cook with the intention of having leftovers to put either at the kids' lunches, my lunch the next day, or to have a quick dinner when we're in a rush tomorrow or the next night. Is this something that people are getting back to doing?
I think there's, you know, a lot of home cooks have always done that, you know, that's always been a sort of time-saving thing. It is interesting, though, because in some ways, you know, what is a leftover? That's actually a question that came up a surprising amount when I was researching. Do you count something that you make in advance and plan to serve later? Is that a true leftover or not? For example, is cheese a leftover? Some of these older cookbooks would say, you know, what to do with your leftover cheese? And to me, cheese isn't a leftover. It's just cheese, you know? And so the idea of pre-cooking food to serve later, for me, brought up that issue about you know, what we consider a leftover at all. But I totally agree with you. I'm of the school of, you know, cook when I can and eat it later, you know, when it's convenient too.
I get to look at a fair amount of cookbooks, but I don't know that I've noticed any trend back toward talking about leftovers. Have you seen anything like that in modern day cookbooks?
I don't see it in the same way I saw it 100 years ago. People will occasionally mention that a certain recipe, for example, a roast pork or chicken, you know, you could reincorporate this meat in another dish. Here's an example. There are some cookbooks dedicated to leftovers now, but I think in part that's because there are just so many cookbooks now. The cookbook market is, you know, incredibly huge. So there's all sorts of, you know, there's cookbooks on every topic. I don't think as a subject it's received the same attention as it used to.
Helen, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
That was Helen Veit. She's an associate professor of history at Michigan State University and the author of the book Modern Food, Moral Food, Self-Control, Science, and the Rise of Modern American Eating in the Early 20th Century.
We just heard about the history of leftovers and what they've meant in our culture over the past century. And we want to hear from you on this, the sort of high holiday of leftovers. Do you love them or do you hate them? Are you like Rob and you plan for extra leftovers? You supersize your recipes to have leftovers? Or do they just happen? And what are your favorite ways to transform leftover ingredients like, oh, say, turkey, maybe rice, potatoes, chicken? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And I know some people reject leftovers. Do you avoid eating leftovers at all costs? Is it a bummer when you eat them? Pro or con on leftovers? Call in now at 800-642-1234. Take your calls in just a minute after looking at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We just heard about the history of leftovers and how they've changed over the years as economic conditions have also changed.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you rely on leftovers to get a quick meal on the table when you're growing up? Were leftovers celebrated or shunned? What's your favorite leftover ingredient to use? Share a memory, a thought, a recipe at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or head over to the Central Time Facebook page, share your thoughts, find some convenient leftover turkey recipes. We'll go to our callers now. Sharon is on the line in Dubuque, Iowa. Sharon, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
I just wanted to tell you that they were at a friend's house one evening and they grilled steaks. And they either grilled too many or some people didn't show up. And the hostess was going to throw them away at the end of the night. And I said, well, I hope this doesn't sound too tacky, but if you're going to throw them away, I'll take them home.
And what'd you do with them, Sharon?
I made omelets for breakfast the next morning.
Oh, sure, steak and eggs. And you know, steak and eggs, Sharon, is not something I would take a raw steak and cook it in the morning and make with eggs. You got that steak cooked. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
Sharon, thank you so much for sharing that story at 800-642-1234. Yeah, I don't know about, I mean, I'm pretty big on leftovers, but I think that's pretty extreme. Like, we got these leftover steaks. Toss them.
I don't know. Does steaks get leathery in the morning? I don't eat a whole lot of red meat. Is that something you got to worry
leftover,
about?
Leftover beef, I think, on a sandwich or a steak and eggs like she did, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, it's not as fresh and tender as your steak aficionados would want, but also it's, you know, it's not cheap. I wouldn't want to just drop it in the garbage.
Yeah.
Feed it to a dog,
right,
at least.
The whole leftover food issue.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Sharon. Let's go on to Rob in Milwaukee. Rob, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what do you like?
Growing up, we use leftovers all the time, but now I take, when I make a roast, I put it in the crock pot, the leftovers, and make a vegetable beef soup out of it, or like turkey, I'll be eating sandwiches, and then the leftovers from that, I take to work, or like dinner, I take to work, and at work, everybody at lunchtime's like, what are you eating today?
And you'll say it was last night's fill in the blank here. Well, that's great, Rob. Thank you for that call. And I know a lot of people do look forward to leftover turkey and experiment with it. I talked to a friend who said he was really looking forward to turkey wild rice soup the next
day.
So
that
sometimes there are these traditions surrounding the leftovers, too.
Thanks a lot for that, Rob. We are talking leftovers, and we want to find out if you love them, if you hate seeing those leftovers show up on the table a second, third, fourth time, what your favorite leftovers are, what you do with them. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. We go next to Spencer on the line in Eau Claire. Spencer, hi.
Hi. I take the leftover turkeys and slice them up into little pieces, put it on wax paper, and melt some cheese over it, put it on a sandwich with toast and hot sauce, butter. Just think it's the best.
So wait, we got turkey, the melted cheese, hot sauce, and butter.
Yeah, it's a little technique I noticed that they use in at like Subway restaurants and stuff like that with the wax paper and the microwave. Yep.
Interesting. And any particular kind of bread or bun you like to serve that on, Spencer?
Something kind of you know, a healthy seeming, you know, like a honey wheat whole grain toast.
Sounds yeah. And have you done that with Thanksgiving leftovers so already this year, Spencer?
Yeah, I have. It's been real good. I prefer it probably to the Thanksgiving meal.
All right. Better than the original. Spencer, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234.
And Deb on Facebook writes, Thanksgiving leftovers are the best. My favorite is Bubble and Squeak, patties of mashed potatoes, turkey, and stuffing fried in butter.
It's fantastic to mix those things up.
Yeah.
I told you I didn't do a traditional Thanksgiving this year. I made turkey tacos. I had some other things. Loved how it came out. My one regret is that I don't get to mix up the turkey, the mashed potatoes, and the stuffing the next
day.
That is my one regret.
Yeah, you could try mashed potatoes. Make fresh mashed potatoes.
True.
And then stuff your turkey tacos in them. My theory, and I'm going to go out on the limb here, is that mashed potatoes are the tabula rasa of food, and that you can put anything in them, and they will taste fine.
Like anything savory.
Anything? Well, I don't know. I haven't tried cheesecake.
Stuff leftover pumpkin pie and mashed potatoes.
I'm going to say it might be tasty.
Don't try this at home, kids. We'll go back to the callers now. Kevin is on the line in Tomahawk. Kevin, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. My wife makes pepper steak, and it's always good the first day, but it's out of this world the second day. It magnifies the flavor and everything, and it's just so much better the second day. I'm not exactly sure why.
Is there a secret to reheating it, Kevin?
No, she just puts it in a kettle on the stove and warms it up, not in the microwave, of course, and puts it over rice. But it's like it magnifies all the flavor sitting overnight in the refrigerator, I'm assuming.
Interesting, Kevin. Thanks a lot for sharing that. I always hear, you know, and think of things like lasagna and some soups and stews that get better as they sit in the fridge. Do you like that, too?
Yeah, so certain flavors, I think, just get deeper and richer the longer they sit. Not all things. Some things get desiccated and more difficult to eat. But some things, the lasagna is a great example of that. Well, we appreciate that call. We're going to go next to Linda in Red Granite. Linda, hi.
Hi. We have this tradition, mostly on Thanksgiving for probably 10 years now, where we make turkey pot pies out of the leftovers on Thanksgiving, and everybody takes home 2 to 3 pies.
Wow. Wow, that's fantastic. Is that a lot of work, or do you use pre-prepared pie crust and all of that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's pre-prepared pie crust, but then we just make a big pot of gravy and throw everything in it, the green bean casserole, the dressing, you name it, and everybody absolutely loves it. It's more family time together. We actually get an assembly line going.
Well, I love that idea, and I bet guests love getting to go home with this special meal that reminds them of this happy time.
Yeah, not only that, you don't have a gazillion Tupperware sitting in your refrigerator.
That's right, and that's actually key, yeah. Isn't it? Well, that's very clever. I might have to steal that some year.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. And we got to check how long the drive is to Red Granite. I'm going to be hungry when I leave. I'm sure Linda's got some of that left.
She's already sent them out. There's no more on site.
Well, she must have kept some.
Oh, maybe.
August is with us next in Baraboo. August, hi.
Hi. I grew up in a family with 9 kids, so my mom always taught us to do a lot with leftovers. But my favorite is any meat or vegetables, making a quiche.
Oh yeah.
And if you don't want to make a crust, you can get a quiche pan, where there's no crust needed. And for dinner, it's great.
Do you have favorite leftover combos in a quiche, August?
Vegetables that are kind of dry and you don't want to reheat them, you know, because they're too dry after being in the oven or something, are great in quiche because quiche can be really wet anyway. So vegetables that are dry, or even turkey that gets, you know, the white meat sometimes can get kind of dry after being in the fridge for a while or whatever. Those dry meats are great in quiches because it keeps it from getting too wet, and it just, the flavor is amazing. It just absorbs all the moisture from the eggs and the milk.
Brilliant idea, August. Thanks so much for that. Yeah, I love having oven-roasted vegetables. There's not enough for a serving on their own, but then they can go into a soup or a stew. I hadn't thought, Keisha, that seems like an obvious one now that he says that. Of course, I didn't think of it myself.
We credit you with that, August. That's a good one. We're going to go next to Joan in West Dallas. Joan, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks a lot for talking about leftovers. It's a good topic. And I was just wanting to, I don't know, just ask you about, you think there's much of a comeback of the way that people used to deal with leftovers a lot would be with chicken soup or chicken broth, if they would have around the chicken broth. And then you just can make soup at any time. And that was a good vehicle for the leftovers of any kind.
Right. Soup. Soup's a great one. You can put a lot of stuff in soup, including, by the way, mashed potatoes.
Sure, yeah. And I've done this. I'll take leftover chicken, whatever, and make stock with it. Story, I just read that Michael Dukakis, former Massachusetts governor, a presidential candidate in 1988, has all of his neighbors bring over their leftover turkey carcasses in Thanksgiving and make soup stock soup for his family for like the year.
Wow.
All these
things. That's what you do when you don't win the presidency.
you make collect a lot turkey of stock. Carcasses and make stock. Well, thank you so much for your calls. Keep things going over at the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.